Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending. With real-time notifications, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy, knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome in. They're already talking about outtakes, and we haven't even started the podcast, so you know it's going to be a fun episode. John Lopez here, Captain Scott Knoll there, Captain Caleb McCumber over there again. We do have the band back together again. I know you guys appreciate it when we got everybody in the room. Captain Caleb does a lot of fishing, so sometimes he can't always make it, but he's on a little bit of a, not hiatus, so I guess it is a hiatus, but you're spending a lot of time with your kid right now, huh?
I'm on a break, man. We are baseball extreme. We're going to private lessons a couple of days a week, and then we've been at the fields every evening. Loving every bit of it. I just needed to take a couple of weeks off and do something else.
Good for you. They say that what does a fishing guy do on vacation? He goes fishing. But you actually doing a little baseball. So that's good. Little particulars that we get out of the way here, of course. Always appreciate you guys. I don't think any listeners are more appreciated because we get to know you, get to see you out on the boats, get to talk with you via whether it's Instagram, at Lopez on Sports, or Captain Scott Knoll. I think it's Captain Scott Knoll on Instagram, right? Yeah, that's what it is. I know it better than you do.
I don't go to Instagram a whole lot.
At Lopez on Sports on Twitter, but the very, very best way is to join the nearly 6,500 now members of the Bite Me group page on Facebook and shoot us a note, post a topic. We'll post a comment in the real time, and then we'll hit it a little deeper in the podcast. Like today, I think just about every question is going to be from our listeners on the Bite Me group page. Don't forget to subscribe on Spotify, which is up and running and blowing and going, and good numbers on Spotify, by the way. And also on Google Podcasts, iTunes. And I've never, Scott, I've literally never, ever done this because I want this to be a fishing community where we talk fishing. But we do talk about gas money. I mean, we all have day jobs. I've never done this ever, so excuse me for saying this. If you want to advertise on this podcast, hit me up. Because I've been getting so many, and this came up from an organic conversation we had off the air. All due respect to people that are hustling, right? I mean, we all hustle for our jobs, whether it's fishing, radio, podcast, your photography, all that. I respect the hustle. But I think we owe it to the people who do support this podcast monetarily. And we, you know, we don't charge a lot of money. So if you want to advertise, we can talk. All right. People posting on the group page, their industry, their business, their wares, so to speak. Guys, I respect your hustle, but I don't think that's respectful to the people that are actually paying.
Right.
You know, and I just wanted to throw that out there. I've never done it before, so excuse me for being a little bit harsh here. I try to be a nice guy and laid back. We've posted it on the group page. Hey, if you guys have a product that you really, really like, we can hook you up. Most of the products that we talk about, and I think we're going to get into that here at this point, Scott, in the podcast, because we're talking about lures. I've said no to a bunch of lures. I don't think so. Everything that we talk about and endorse here that are paid, some we don't, are unpaid because we like them so much. You know, Sims, you know, I use the hell out of Sims waders when I got my Wade Wright belt, all that stuff. Sims doesn't pay me anything. I just like them. I mean, if Sims, anybody from Sims listening, we can take care of you and talk about your product a lot more.
Are you listening, Eric?
Eric. We can talk.
I know him.
We do. Well, tell Eric we're really cheap because this is a community podcast that has grown into a monster. And some of the people that have advertised with us, I haven't raised their rates a penny. people keep telling you can charge a lot more than that. I'm like, no, man, I don't want to. It's a community podcast, so please excuse the self-serving, endorsement there. But it, really, the main reason I was doing it, because you and Kayla both gave me the heads up. We respect your hustle, but just respect the people that are paying. You know what I mean?
Yep. We're just trying to get away from having a whole bunch of spam on our group page. We want it to be fishing.
Yeah.
You know, we want it to be about fishing. But we got to circle back real quick on something on Caleb's vacation.
I can see the look in your eyes. Just say it.
Hey, so
he rented a pontoon boat.
Oh, I did.
You did?
I
did
and rent a pontoon. The stories behind the pontoon boat had me rolling.
Let's stop everything then. I got a lot of great topics on fishing, but I got to hear the pontoon boat story.
Captain Caleb goes to Pensacola.
Mm-hmm. And he put a picture up, and guess what wasn't on the skeg?
What?
Paint.
On a pontoon boat?
Man, I mean, you got to get shallow to snorkel.
No, you don't. Yeah. You really don't. That's not true. That's factually incorrect.
These guys, man,
he's burning shorelines trying to go snorkeling.
It started as soon as I got there. We show up and they had a V-hole with a 300 on it, and I was jumping up and down. That's what I wanted. And the other eight people that were coming with me weren't so enthusiastic about it. And we'll just go through the day here.
I'm interested. You got my attention, man.
It was a good time.
He had me rolling with it.
So we show up. We show up, and we walk down there to get our tri-tune. I think of it. Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know the difference. But it was a pontoon boat, and the guy jacks the motor up the water, and he tells me take a picture of it. I said, "What? Why?" He said, "Well, so whenever you get back, if something's messed up, like you're the
something's gonna be messed up."
And we jacked
the legend of Caleb has traveled to Florida.
Yeah, so we jacked it up and took a picture and put it back in the water. So I get in and there's we're in Orange is where we're at, and it's right there by the coast, and there's a big bad storm right off of the
I think the bad stuff has passed already.
No, it's right off the beachfront. And the guy giving me the speech about how if weather or anything cancels us, that the trip is non-refundable. Just sorry about your luck, bud. Which I need to look into that for my fishing service, apparently.
Yeah.
And this storm, and so I'm like, we're going. We are going. And this storm is blowing me into the docks real bad. And these are like long T, like bulkhead type docks.
Yeah, I know which ones you're talking about.
And so and they just give you the keys and say, let you go. And man, there was this group of foreigners in this other boat.
It's just getting worse.
They hit every dock and every boat on the way out.
Don't even say it. Don't say the ethnicity. I don't need that in my life.
But I'm sitting here going, this guy made me take a picture of this prop. And they have hit every boat with the boat, right?
Hey, that's their problem.
So anyway, So I'm coming out, and the pontoon has got the big canvas top on it. It's like I'm in a sailboat, right? Yeah. And this wind's blowing me. And so I figure out my only option here is to come out of the slip, turn right, and then back all the way out of this thing, which is, gotcha. I don't know, 30, 40 yards. And so I'm coming out, and I'm under power, man. I mean, if I get off of it, I'm going into the woods somewhere.
Yeah.
And I might get slightly more foreign. And so I'm coming out, and there's this two-seater kayak, and they're maybe 40 yards away from me. And they're paddling.
No.
They're paddling like the wind.
They can't win.
And they're coming like perpendicular to me, right? And I see them coming. And anybody drives a boat, you can get it. You can get a pretty good head of speed going backwards, cut the wheel, kick it forward, and that boat's going to spin on an axis.
Yeah.
And I'm coming back. I get about 30 yards from this kayak. And I cut it, and I hit it in forwards, and it just spins right around, nice and beautiful. And this little skinny feller and his little skinny feller friend, they start yelling at my boat, and it goes nothing like they expected it to. Boy, I was on the back of the boat, and we were talking about the etiquette of kayaking / boating, and I kindly explained to him the law of gross tonnages and who has the right of way, and totally he had a black and white kayak, and I totally did not tell him to paddle his penguin up here to this boat, and we'll talk about it. So off we go. I've been verbally assaulted by a kayaker already.
You had nothing to do with it. You were just minding your own business.
And so the guy, whenever I was leaving, I told him, you know, my plans were, there's this place called Big Lagoon And we're in Little Lagoon, and Big Lagoon is a little bit to the east. Big Lagoon has this really cool big sandbar. There's a Air Force or Naval base there, and the Blue Angels, they take off and practice and everything. There's the big sand dune, like the kids ride the board down. I'm all excited about it, right?
Yeah.
Well, there's this bridge between here and there, and old dude tells me, you are not to go under this bridge. All right. And so off we go, and I'm headed to the bridge.
Of course.
Yeah.
And we stop and take the kids scuba or snorkeling a couple of places, and then we go to this place called Pirate's Landing, which was really, really, I just want to bring it up, terrible food. It was awful. And
okay, so there's one that's not going to advertise.
Yeah, but there was the waiter there, I promise you, he had the scraggly dog like the pirates had, and this dude had a peg leg.
Seriously?
He had a peg leg and a scraggly dog. I fell in love. I bought a t-shirt. I have pictures? A t-shirt. My wife's a bit more conservative, and while I'm trying to get her to take the picture, she's telling me to leave this guy alone. I mean, I was going for it. And so anyway, we take off, and I'm headed to the bridge again. And the storm starts wrapping us, so we stopped and we snorkeled here and there and here and there, and we get back and we jack the motor up out of the water, and it had an aluminum prop on it that
had past tense.
To my defense, there's a lot of seagrass rules in Florida that make you drive in places you probably maybe shouldn't drive a pontoon boat in.
Yeah.
But anyway, it had the aluminum prop and it had the skeg, and of which neither one of them had paint on them anymore. After a long argument, me and the guy decided that maybe the one ear was already bent a little bit on that prop. It was just an overall good time. 10 out of 10, recommended. Oh, and he says, hey, somebody called in and said they saw you under the bridge.
My favorite part.
Yeah, he said somebody called
they
in.
They tattled?
Yeah, so he said somebody called in and said they saw you under the bridge. I said, well, while I will admit that I may look like the kind of guy that would go under the bridge and break the rules, I didn't do it this time, so nice bluff, bud. And I still don't know if I got ratted out or not. But
oh, you got ratted out.
But either way, that $250 fine they talked about didn't happen.
Oh, really?
No, we're good. They were very happy to see me come back. And
I feel like you're leaving a little part of the story out, but I'm not going to pursue it.
Yeah,
we had a good time.
You know, I learned that I may have a future in dolphin tourism trips.
Oh, a little tit for tat.
Yeah, we did. We ran down some.
I know where you're going with this.
Ran down some dolphins.
I'm not going to say that's actually what happened, but I know where you're going with this.
Okay.
hey, since we're already off the rails by a mile, you did mention something that I don't think we've talked about in a long time, if ever, really. Right of way on the water. Everybody take the boater safety course. You'll learn it and everything else real good. But I was thinking of what you said, because I was out with, I forget who, and a sailboat was coming. And I said, we got to move. Sailboat always has right of way over any powered vehicle, correct?
Yep.
Tonnage has right of way over any smaller. You see a barge, don't act like, I mean, even though we skim them pretty closely, right? in the ditch, but... go over some of the other real quick right-of-way things. Scott, I'll start with you. This is right in your wheelhouse. When you're on the boat, a lot of people... actually, I think I said the gist of it. Sailboats always have right-of-way. Tonnage, if you're littler, and that includes kayaks.
What if the sailboat's under power?
Same.
Oh.
I looked it up. I took the boater safety course twice.
Well, it turns out I've been wrong on one occasion.
You know, I write down as we're talking, I write down topics that are off of the rundown that I usually send you guys, because the rundown is never exact because of stuff, because Caleb joins us.
We don't even read it, John.
I know you don't. You don't read until you sit down. I do it for my purposes, okay? For my peace of mind, so we have a little bit of direction on this old podcast. So when he started talking about that, I put at the top of the rundown for this week's show, Tales of Captain Caleb, part 3,456.
Point two.
So anything else on right away that our listeners should know? Real quick before we get into the other topics.
I mean, if you're in a kayak and there's a boat fighting the wind, don't paddle out behind him.
That's a very specific. That's a very specific thing.
Very specific. The rules of right away do you no good if you get your butt run over. And that's the main one to keep in mind. Just because you have the right of way doesn't mean that other guy knows that you have the right of way.
That's a great point.
So my deal is always I give way. You know, if I see somebody coming and I don't think they're paying much attention, even if I know I'm in the right, I'm in the channel or whatever the, you know, the rule is that is being broken by the other boat, I'm not going to get in a boat wreck to prove a point.
Yeah.
Unlike somebody else.
99 out of 100 have no idea what the right of way is. Just the fact that we're having to explain it right here says that.
Well, they will now.
I think Caleb would probably get in a wreck to prove that he's right.
I almost hit a boat about 6 months ago. I was going down Caney Creek, and I was, you know, probably 50 yards off of the houses. And don't yell at me because the tide was not up. They hate when the tide's up and you get the water, the wake into their docks.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
And there is no, I mean, you can go on the right of a boat or the left of a boat depending on where their heading is, correct?
Yeah.
You would try to go on the right.
We are in America, but.
You try to go
on the right.
On the right, like you're driving in America. Right.
That's the proper way.
But I happen to be scaling, and the guy came around the corner. And so I just kept my bearing, you know, and he just all of a sudden turned from, he was on my right, not my left, which is, I normally like to keep him on the left. He started turning toward me and shaking his fist. I'm like, I get it. I should have been on the other side, but I didn't see you. And he just kept coming toward me. So I had to veer all the way to the right and go around.
Oh, that would have been a tough one.
Bearing has the bearing of the boat that's coming at you. You know where I'm talking about. You turn around out of.
No, I know exactly. You know, in those corners, I try not to wrap them just because you can't see people coming. Even leaving back lakes, I try not to wrap them too much.
Yeah.
But Scott's 100% correct in that you just need. Scott's one thing he said, as long as I've known him, is better to be proactive than reactive.
Yeah.
And you know he's spot on about that because they're 9 times out of 10 they don't know it. I mean maybe every once in a while we don't know it, but it sometimes they're not even looking at you. They don't even see you.
Right.
They're playing with their radio or grabbing a drink or tying a lure or checking their phone. Mm-hmm. All of us are guilty of running down the intercoastal. And you look up in front of you, and it's wide open, and you can mess your. I'll get out of
and
my.
It comes like that.
I've got out of my driver's seat and went and grabbed something off the floor and got back in it. You know,
there's a boat right in front of you.
Well, no, I mean, I was being more safe than that. But if somebody comes blowing out of a back lake, you know, I know where I'm at. I know if there's a back lake coming. But the point is you just gotta kind of just keep a heads up. Really,
and remember the bearing that you're on and they're on is what I always try. But this guy clearly knew that he was one of the. One out of 99.
We might have had to play chicken.
He started turning toward me like, I got to go on your right. No, you don't.
My bearing is straight.
Yeah.
Maintaining your heading is yes.
It is right there. He shook his fist. By the way, don't shake your fist. That's what does that accomplish? You know, come on. Just have a nice conversation.
Maybe
you
were saying gig them.
Well, gig them. I like that. They're going to have a good year. All right. Back to regularly scheduled programming. Here.
This is not a train track.
We're only 17 minutes in and we're starting the podcast again. Okay, so here's what we're going to cover. When the honey hole gets exposed, really good question that I think a lot of people can relate to. Setting up your boat the right way. And this has to do with elevated platforms. This is a Caleb special here. Setting up your boat that way. Trying a new lure confidentially, confidently, because or confidentially, but The question was about, we always talk about throwing confidence baits, but you always want to try, it's just human nature to try something else. What makes you want to try that lure confidently? And we got a lot more, including using the wind direction to your advantage. Let's start with the honey hole question, which is a good long question that neither of you read, but I'll read it now.
He's just assuming we didn't
read that. He just told me you don't, and you've told me in the past.
Yeah.
Scott sits down every week and opens his phone. All right, what are we going to talk about today?
Yeah.
So,
well, in my defense, sometimes we don't get to everything.
This is true.
We don't even get there.
All right. Love the podcast. Started listening 2 months ago. Started from the beginning. Thank you all for all the knowledge. Totally understand your obsession with fishing. By the way, I started reading the wrong question. Let's go to the honey hole question.
Reading honey hole question. Yeah, that is not what it says.
We'll get to that one later. This is the other question. My honey hole of an area got exposed by a popular fishing YouTube show. Can't be Caleb's.
Wasn't me.
Yeah, can't be Caleb's. The last 2 days has had tons of boats stacked in it. Kind of makes me wonder if I should just go explore other areas or hit it up. This is a spot that I normally see 2 or 3 boats at. Monday, I counted 18. What do you think? By the way, they were catching fish there, or at least someone was. Fished out or just go with what I know and planned on doing for my days off? Hate to see this because it's one area that I did not seem to be affected by the freeze. Scott, your thoughts on that question.
Okay, you know your area. You know that honey hole.
Yeah.
You know the bottom. You know everything about it, because mm-hmm. that's your go-to honey hole. You should know at least 1, 2, 3, 4 other places that are similar. They should also be holding fish. I'm not pulling in with 18 boats.
No.
That's just it. Fish or no fish. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the fish are jumping in the boat, I don't care. I don't want to be around 18 other boats.
Yeah.
I'll go to the opposite side of the bay and not catch anything before I fish with 18 other people. That's just
18
me.
18 other boats.
Yeah, 18 other boats. It's too crowded. Mm-hmm. You know, at that point, you got people slamming cooler lids. You got everything going on. The chances of your honey hole being productive that day have diminished greatly when there's that many people around.
Anything to add?
That's
what I was going to say.
That pretty well covers the obvious, but hopefully while you discovered that honey hole, you also knew what the tide was doing, the time of day, all that kind of good stuff. And, you know, whenever I'll find a good bite on a beginning of an incoming tide, or beginning of an outgoing, something like that. That time changes every day. So there's a chance that those people are up there fishing the stuff whenever it's not the ideal time to fish that spot.
Yeah.
So you could actually go fish that at a different time of the day and get the same results as you did, you know, 3 days before, because that time and that bite window is changing every single day. So, yeah. I mean, that'd be the more technical approach I would have to it over, you know, what Scott said, which was the obvious answer, is go find something similar.
Yeah, the way I would put it, Scott, is I look at it as an opportunity. You know, okay, yeah. I ain't fishing here. Start thinking in terms of what you just said, and also an opportunity to, like, okay, well, it's this area is going to be fished out. I haven't fished here in a long time, or I haven't, you know, gone to this back lake in a year. You look at it as an opportunity. If you just feel like you have to catch some fish, depending on how long you're on the water, I would maybe start out even further out from that spot. If you go back to that spot, I've done this multiple times with mixed bag, of course, but some luck, fish move, man. Well, they hear all those lids that you're talking about and all that. There's going to be an area that they didn't move very far to. And that's what I would do. If I would go back, I'd explore first, use it as an opportunity, and then maybe go back to it.
Yeah. And when Caleb was talking just then, it reminded me of a deal I did back in Greens Lake.
Mm-hmm.
There's an old fence line that goes back through there. Anybody that's been back there knows, you know, these old... It was a cow pasture before, and there's still the old fence post. I had a customer, got all excited. We had school of fish working along the shoreline right there, and he took video of it and posted it. Well, he tagged me on it, and there was several people that follow me really closely, and they went, oh, I know exactly where he was.
He's been mad about this forever. This is the first story he ever told me.
10 years, yeah. But it still irritates me. And because the guy who did it was he's a pretty decent fisherman. He fishes tournaments and all that. But anyway, he's okay. Anyway, but what I would do over there, there was only a certain time of day that they would come up and do that. Mm-hmm. So I would be poling in the back lakes around that area where I could see that area and watch for the birds to start working that shoreline.
Right.
And we would catch our few fish here and there. And then all of a sudden that shoreline would turn on and I'd go over there and we'd hammer them. Mm-hmm. You know, we'd have a great, great morning. This guy comes blowing in there at daylight and comes over and jumps on a trolling motor. And I'm poling and being quiet. He jumps on a trolling motor with four guys in the boat throwing popping corks. And they're just hammering this fence line. It just went up and down it, up and down it, up and down it. And I'm poling over on the side lakes just watching him. They roar out of there. I wait about an hour later. Mm-hmm. My fish showed up. Mm-hmm. And they start working up and down that shoreline. And I just eased over there and we had a good day.
Yeah.
You know, caught our fish. But he got blocked.
We still think about him often.
Yeah. He got blocked.
I have a lake that does the exact same thing in Matagorda. People can mess with it all the time.
Yeah.
But it takes a particular set of circumstances for it. And it's a 50 to 60 fish spot whenever it's right.
Wow.
When it's not, all they're doing is tearing stuff up.
Yep. Mm-hmm. This one's all about tide.
Yeah. That's where this is.
You had to have a high tide to get the water up in the grass
and then
get the shrimp up in the grass. And then when that tide fell out
and
it got just to the edge where the bottom of the grass was touching water, those shrimp would fall out of that grass and those reds would work the hell, you know, just gorge on that shoreline.
Yeah.
But it had to be just right. And he went in there while it was still up high and all the fish
was banging around and throwing everything.
Yeah, the shrimp were still in the grass.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't work that way. So for those folks who do that and watch other people's Facebook pages and things like that, know that not every spot is a good spot all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's reasons why we fish certain areas at certain times. Mm-hmm. And that's just hours and hours and hours and days on the water.
That's a good way, a good transition to, excuse me, trying a new lure confidently. I thought this was a good question. I really did. We all have our confidence base. We preach it. We talk about profiles and colors and all that. We've also all, I wouldn't have ever thrown a Lily if I hadn't at one point said, and I don't even throw it anymore. That thing's kind of fallen off the face of the earth. If I hadn't said, you know what? I feel good about this. What makes you try a new lure and having the confidence in it?
Usually because I'm sucking at the time.
Yeah.
And that's how I discovered my very favorite fly. Everybody knows redfish crack is my favorite fly. You don't need fly fishing, you know that.
Yeah.
Well, I was suffering, man. I mean, I was out there and I was just beating my head against a wall for 2 or 3 days, throwing all kind of different flies at these fish, my go-tos. And I wasn't doing any good. And Andy Packmore, Fishing Tackle Unlimited at the time, he kept talking about this redfish crack and how they couldn't refuse it. Mm-hmm. And finally I gave up and said, all right, Andy, show me a redfish crack.
Yeah.
And I took it out there the next day and hammered some fish, caught a bunch of fish on it. It's usually when you're in a slump. It probably wasn't even the flies I was throwing. It was just a slump. Mm-hmm. You know, they weren't eating whatever. Then when I put the crack fly on there, you know.
And there's your confidence.
It got my confidence up.
Yeah.
And it's held over the years. But, yeah, that's usually, and it's wrong. It really is wrong.
Because we talk about.
Because the worst time to try a new lure is when fishing sucks.
Yeah.
The best time to try a new lure is when you're in them. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. I get it. But when you're catching a lot of fish, if you want to try out, you know, you've got no confidence in top waters.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're out there and you're hammering them on your soft plastics and, man, you're having a great morning. It's really hard to cut that soft plastic off and put a top water on, but that's the time to do it. You know you're in fish. You know they're there. You know they're feeding.
Mm-hmm.
So now is a good time to try that new lure, and it'll give you the confidence to throw it later when you might not know that the fish are
like
there.
What are your go-to baits that just generally, just what we're here, this is what I love to throw?
DOA paddle tail.
Mm-hmm.
The small one is generally one I throw most in the marsh, with a weedless hook on it with a belly weight.
Mm-hmm.
For redfish. Tarpon didn't want to throw the DOA bait buster.
Yeah.
I've had more success on a DOA bait buster than any of them. That's another one where somebody told me, Ed with DOA is a guy, you know, he works
at DOA. That's the fellow I met at the fishing show, yeah.
He works at DOA, but he's a damn good guide,
mm-hmm.
and he fishes over in Florida, and that's one of his go-tos. I had looked at that bait 100 times. I had them in my box, and I just would not throw them because they just don't look like anything. It looks like just a piece of plastic that's just going to, you know, glide through the water and no action to it. And I was having a hard time, you know, catching some tarpon.
Mm-hmm.
And Ed kept on me about it. Said, man, just throw the DOA bait buster, man. Just throw it. Just try it. And I did, and boom.
Caught.
Yeah. You know, we started hooking up. Now, whether they would have eaten something else that day, I don't know. But I can tell you that I've gotten the confidence in it now where that's – when I leave the dock, that's what's tied on most of the time when I'm going out tarpon fishing. That's the first one that's on.
And that was because of you had the confidence to throw that based on word of mouth?
Based on word of mouth from a very, very good fisherman.
Yeah.
And – everybody's got their favorites. You know, we mm-hmm. all have our favorite colors. We all have our favorite ideas about it. And when you're struggling, that's when, you know, you want that slump buster, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're thinking, man, well, if I just try something else, maybe it'll work. And if it's something that works for a very good fisherman that I'm very familiar with, then I'll go to it. If it's just something that's been advertised.
Yeah.
And
that's not confidence to me because everybody has the latest, greatest, whatever. Yeah.
That's not what sells me on a lure. Yeah. What sells me on a lure is talking to somebody I know can fish
mm-hmm.
and they have confidence in that lure. So it's got to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Scott pretty well said it all there. You know, when you're trying something new, you want to be on a hot bite. And then I'm the same way. I like the little 3-inch paddle tails from DOA. The bait busters have done some cool stuff for me recently in the surf. I like a really big paddle tail, and Scott has Ed. Pat Gardner's my guy.
Mm-hmm.
Pat, I'm pretty hard headed in what I'm going to throw. I'm going to throw a quirky.
Pat will try a lot of different stuff.
He tries a lot of stuff, and I'm very fortunate to call Pat one of my best friends, and we confide in each other quite a bit. And you know, he'll find something new that's working. Almost every time I go to Academy, I make sure I'm on the phone with Pat because he's, hey man, and this is the weirdest off the wall stuff. And he's like, hey, they got that, and I'm like, yeah. And whenever he says, hey, pick me up a couple,
you know, it's not just
I'm buying five of them. I'm buying five of them. There was a particular topwater that was just an absolute beast for 2 weeks straight,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't even on the same aisle I shop on. And whenever I got for a week and a half, when I got out of the boat, I didn't even take lures with me.
Yeah.
That top water was on my rod, and I go fish 6 hours with it. But that's another thing to get confidence in a bait. You know, my guys, I've had some people recently that had never thrown tops or never thrown quirkies or whatever, and they start putting on their big old tackle box to get out of the boat. And no, leave that there.
Yeah.
But carry what you got tied on. If you break it off, we'll walk back to the boat. And and that's really where you learn how to use a lure and get some confidence in it when you make yourself stick through it. If it's something that you're going to throw for 5 minutes and then take off and go back to your confidence bait, there wasn't any sense in spending the money on it in the first place.
Yeah.
That's why I don't like those quick change.
Mm.
Man, I get
because it teases you into I'll doing get it a more guy than that, you should.
Oh, man, I get a guy shows up on the boat and he's got that quick little quick change deal
clasp
on there.
Yeah.
And I just know what kind of day it's going to be. Yeah, he's going to throw one lure four times, and then he's going to spend a few minutes changing out lures.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing I would add, and this is just from personal experience over the years, is don't be hard-headed in terms of you're with three other guys. One guy is catching a lot of bait on something you've never – a lot of fish with something you've never thrown before. Don't be like, I'll catch them.
Yeah, no, give me that.
Give me that.
Give me that.
Yeah, that for sure.
Yeah.
And everybody knows I throw Deadly Dudley. I throw hard topwaters, and I throw corkies. Those are probably my three, occasional spoon. But even from paddle tail to you know, rat tail. Oh, I sent you the picture when I got on those trout about a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. I was using my electric chicken, and I would catch one trout. Yeah, then 20 minutes later, maybe another trout. And I'm looking at it, and I'm like, I just went with the clear and the red speck, the shrimp rat tail, and boom, 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 boom. Just don't be hard-headed.
You know, me and Pat got those fish pretty good for a couple of days after that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Good. Man, if you missed it by 10 feet, you weren't catching them, though.
I'm telling you,
if you missed it, but because the day that you were there, I drifted it and I was probably 30 yards off of it and didn't catch a single thing. And then you sent me that, and I thought, this guy's he's lying to me.
he even told me.
Yeah,
me and I were talking. He's like, I don't think Lopez caught fish right there.
No, I said
he caught him somewhere else. I think he caught him somewhere else.
I said I don't think he knows where he was at.
Like, I missed you by 5 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, because I was there.
Yeah,
but I never saw you. And so the next day, I went back out there and I hit it dead center, and dag nabbit, I called Pat. I was like, all right, he wasn't lying. Because I think the first drift we picked up like 7 fish. Oh, it was ridiculous.
I would drift with,
and
yeah.
What would you drift, 60 yards?
Nothing. Yeah. Hardly, and it was just right there.
Yeah.
But again, I wasn't catching as many with the electric chicken paddle tail, which I catch is my number one bait. I throw that more than anything. But I put that little shrimp colored rat tail and boom, 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 boom.
You know, and while we're busy talking trash about John, I told Pat, I said, do not tell him we caught a bunch of fish here. We'll never hear the end of it.
He doesn't need that. Let me tell you where to catch fish, Caleb. You need any help, just give me a call.
Yeah.
I'll tell you where not to go.
Exactly. All right. So this is another Caleb special, so I'm going to start with you. This is the long question that I was reading earlier. So I'll just pick it up where I left off. Here's a topic that I haven't heard y'all cover. I love the prop stuff, different shallow water boats, et cetera, all great info on the podcast. But my question is about the boat setup. For example, I run a 2019 Baby Cat, mainly drift fish, disappearing in the back lakes, side casting redfish. But he goes on to talk about, I'm curious y'all's take, including Caleb's, he mentioned you by name, on rate.
Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Fixed console, flush console, rod storage, coolers, live wells, casting platforms, et cetera, et cetera. Setting up your boat, it sounds like he's a shallow water guy like us. I mean, to me, it's personal preference and what you fish the most. But what are your thoughts on just like, okay, I'm getting a new boat. How should I set it up for me?
Okay, so fortunately for this conversation, I have fished a lot out of a Baby Cat.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. You have to wrap your head around what it is you're planning on doing and the boat that you're doing it out of. If I was in that Baby Cat, and this is how Robert and Taylor and I run Robert's boat, it has a little small 45 quart cooler in it,
mm-hmm.
you know, not a lot of weight because you're wanting to take a small boat into small places. So you don't want to put a bunch of weight in it. A raised console, I wouldn't even consider it on a Baby Cat. What we do is we have about a 4 or 5 foot, probably 4 foot casting platform built for the front of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you get too tall on those smaller boats, they can get a little bit rockier than a bigger boat, yeah. Right? And then Robert has a fold-up burn bar if you want to get two people up high. He used to have over the back of his motor, he had like a poling platform. And Taylor would stand on the back. He called that his office up on top of that platform. And then Robert would stand on the front. And that worked really well for that Baby Cat. When you start getting into bigger boats like mine, you have more water displacement, so I can get away with putting a little bit more weight and whatnot in it.
Yeah.
And that's where I go with I have my mid tower, which really doesn't add a whole lot of weight to it. But I'll have, you know, one cooler in there and my fold up burn bar. Seating is probably pretty darn important. My boat's big enough that I have room to have a seat in the back.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I can put my cooler in the front, I can carry 6 people in my boat. Everybody's sitting down, but you really have to pay attention to what kind of water you're trying to get into and how you're setting that boat up and what kind of weight you're putting in that boat.
Yeah. And you have a different go-to regular type of fishing. You're kind of running the beachfronts and offshore a little bit. How's your setup?
I want to be up high. I did the raised console.
Yeah.
So I want to be as high as I can get. I also have the fold-down footrest on my seat. So I'm standing on that on top of the raised console. So mm-hmm. it puts me up a little bit higher.
How high is your raised? Yours is bigger than a normal raised console.
Yeah, it's quite a bit bigger.
Yeah, because you see those like 20, 24-inch riser boxes with the seats on them.
Yeah.
And I honestly can't see the benefit in it. I mean, yeah, you're a little bit higher.
Yeah, but there's two benefits on mine. It gave me a bigger gas tank, as well as mm-hmm. yeah. Having it.
But yours is up there a little bit more. I've only been in that boat once, but I feel like we were taller in
you're
that.
You're up pretty good.
Yeah.
Don't accidentally step off the side of it.
28, 30 inches?
I don't know if it's that. It might be. I don't know.
It's up there a little bit.
I never really actually measured it, tell you the truth.
And that's why I go with the mid tower, because I'm my feet are 3 feet above, or maybe even a little bit more.
On the platform.
On the platform, my feet. Yeah. So if I stand up, my head is 9 feet higher than it would be. Let me see. Yeah, it's something 6 feet higher than it would be if I was sitting
on the water.
Yes, yes. Yeah. So, I mean, it's worth it to me. I get that a lot. Why do you have a mid tower? And I saw some. You know, well, that's so air can go under his boat and he's faster and everything. I don't see the benefits in just a riser box versus if you're going to do it. Either way, it's one step in it.
Yeah.
A 24-inch riser box or my mid tower, yeah, I have to step up one time before I'm in the seats, and that's something else to think about there.
That's what I do, and I have a raised platform on my my helm on the Freedom Warrior. Part of it, and I'm just going to be completely honest here, it's much more convenient, and I can still see most of what I want to see from that height, and I don't want to work. I always say that. I don't want to work that hard. I want to have fun. Occasionally, I'll stand on the actual top of the helm there, on top of the very top.
The console.
The console, thank you. Because I want to see better because I'm in a back lake or something. But it has to be pretty special circumstances, and I have to have seen something that gauge my interest. Because a lot of times I just want to stand up. I can see enough. You don't have to be in that 12-foot tall platform unless you're a tournament fisherman like Caleb and you're always doing that. I mean, it also has to fit your convenience.
You have to think about what you're going to do the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. I might do this. I might occasionally go do this. So I want to set my boat up where mm-hmm. I can do that. Set your boat up to do what you really like to do the most mm-hmm. and then make it work for the things that you do occasionally. For mine, I stand on top of the console all the time when mm-hmm. I'm offshore. Mm-hmm. When I'm out there running around, once I'm on the trolling motor, I'm in the area where the jacks or whatever I'm chasing, tarpon or whatever. I'm up there on the top. I've got my two anglers on the front. I've got a casting platform for the front, but it's only for one person.
Mm-hmm.
So most of the time, unless it's a fly fisherman, where I know I'm only going to have one guy casting, I take it off so that I can have two guys on the bow of the boat casting at the same time. Otherwise, you end up one guy standing down on the deck and one guy's up top, and somebody's going to get a hook in them.
Yeah.
So you got to kind of figure out how you're going to be fishing it too.
Mm-hmm.
Like he was talking about with Robert and Taylor, one of them at either end of the boat, both of them up high, it works.
Mm-hmm.
If they were both going to try to fish off the front and run a trolling motor into some little backwaters and do all that, you want both of you on the front casting to new water.
Right.
So you'd probably go ahead and take the casting platform off unless it was big enough for two people.
I was talking to, just real quick, Caleb, I was talking to, because it ties in with that, to JT over at the boatyard, and he's setting up my new boat, and I like it. I said I want it exactly like my last one, raised platform. I can stand up there if I want to, but it doesn't have the fold-up.
Burn bar,
thank you. And he goes, you want that? I was like, nah. I mean, I'll stand up there one out of every 8-10 trips, so why have it just to be cool? You know, just to look cool. I don't need that. You need it. I don't.
Yeah, the height is really good for me, for seeing fish and whatnot.
Yeah.
But I will say that my boat is probably set up 40% for seeing fish and 60% for seeing where I'm going.
Mm-hmm.
I get in those little Louisiana and even some spots around Matagorda.
That's another aspect of it. That's important.
I want to be able to see those little pieces of water in front of me and what I've got coming up on me, because I'm on plane a lot of the time while
and
I'm trying to do that.
New water, relatively.
Right. But the mid tower, there's drawbacks to it too. There's been a lot of people get real interested in my boat, seeing it on YouTube and everything.
Right, because it's really, you got a really cool boat.
Yeah, it's
but
not.
But I don't need what you have on the top.
it does what I want to do, but. Yeah. It exacerbates the movements of the waves. You know, you're going to get rocked around a lot more up there. It's not going to be as smooth of a ride, all that kind of stuff. So you have to really, and my boat, most of my trips are one and two people.
Mm-hmm.
I guide three on occasion, four maybe once a year.
Yeah.
My boat is not, it's 25 feet long, and it is not easy for four people to fish off of it. You know, it's very doable, but it's not.
But because of your setup too, because of how you fish most.
Right. So, I can put a guy in the back. I'll stay on the tower. A guy right in front of the tower, and a guy on the nose. And my 23-foot boat, it was very hard to do. The 25 is a little bit better. So if you're buying a boat, and most of my fishermen are really good fishermen. If you're buying a boat for your family or something, and your kids are going to be trying to fish and whatnot, that tower whoops Cade. He has a hard time with it because he'll come with me when I'm guiding or something. My kid's never going to get the good spot to stand. So if he wants to try to fish, he's going to be right there around that tower somewhere. So, you know, these are also things to think about. It's easy to look at all the pros, but the cons are usually something you don't figure out until you're already there.
Right. Does Steve get up there?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. That's Steve's house.
Steve's in there.
Steve's got a bed up there, everything.
The other part is T-tops.
Sorry, T-top people.
T-top nation.
Yeah, T-tops are rod breakers.
Oh,
I mean they really are. I say that, but I may end up with one here before too long.
Well, if you're an offshore guy, it's a little more doable.
Yeah, it's a lot more doable if you're doing that. Everybody says, "Well, what about I want the shade. I want the shade." When are we out there fishing? Early in the morning, late in the evening.
Yeah.
And you don't get any shade. The shade's on the water off to the side of the boat. It's not underneath that, you know.
You got 3 hours a day of shade.
Yeah.
You know, noon to 1:30, 2 o'clock.
You've got this little 4-foot by 4-foot thing above you, and there's just, you know, that shade's not there with a low sun angle.
Yeah.
You know, you're still getting the sun. So
I think that's a cool factor also. A lot of guys just like to have that T-top.
Yes.
Have the little bags up there.
The only reason I'm looking at it is because I'm thinking about getting a top drive.
That'd be sweet.
Getting a dual helm.
Yeah.
And being able to run the beachfront from up top and being way up there. That's another reason, on me, y'all are talking about redfish in the marsh. Yeah, it's great to get up higher to see that. Tarpon fishing and chasing weed lines and
you're looking
doing
at the
all
horizon,
those things,
right?
You're looking way out off the boat.
Yeah.
The higher you can get, the better off you are. My Poland skiff, I've had a lot of people say, why didn't you get a sit-down console? It's a lot more comfortable to drive it than, I've got a tiller. And I stand up and run my tiller. And that's partly what Caleb was talking about. I want to be able to see what's coming around the corner.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting down in a Poland skiff and running, you can't see
it's
anything.
Way down. I used to have that Scout.
Yeah. You can't see.
I mean,
see.
I'm like this, a foot off the water, my head, I'm just like. Yeah.
And you can't run those little twisty, turny bayous with salt grass up higher than your head. You're going to run into somebody or something. And so being able to stand up on that, and I'll even stand on the back deck and run it from up there, get a little bit even higher.
Don't do
times.
This at home, kids.
Yeah. But, yeah. But my last Poland skiff, I actually had a raised console. I did, you saw it.
Yeah. Probably 18 inches or something?
Yeah. It was probably 24 inches. It was pretty high.
You were up there a bit, yeah.
It was a fairly high little console for a little bitty Poland skiff.
Yeah.
The first time I ran it, I was like, oh, I may have made a mistake.
He looked like Yao Ming on a surfboard in that thing.
I'm cutting through the marsh the first time I had it.
I made a
turn, and from up there, it exaggerates. Yeah. And those boats lean when you turn them.
Oh, yeah.
And, man, I made that turn, and I was like, ooh, this might have been a mistake.
Just wear that inflatable life jacket.
Yeah. I just paid how much for this boat?
Exactly.
I might be needing a new one.
So me,
but I got used to it real quick, and I loved it because I could see oyster reefs from up there. And I ran around Galveston a lot in those shallow back lakes. And it's just got scattered pods of oysters here and there. And I knew where all of them were, but every now and then, water would be down a little lower, and I'd be running along there.
Whoa,
there's a new one. And after Hurricane Ike that was trash. Mm. And I avoided a freezer one day because of that little console. There was a freezer that was like 3 inches underwater, and I'm running from up top.
Oh, baby.
And as I came around that corner, what the hell is that? And I went around it.
That's a definite thing that Mid-Tower does, is trash in the water, or even, you know, the schools of Jacks and the big dark spot in the water. It's easier to see it from up there. I'll be on my tower making calls to my guys that are on the deck casting, and there you're talking fish 20 feet away, and I can count spots on them, and the people in the front are going, where are they at?
Oh yeah.
But no, Scott and I have both gotten really interested in some big top dries for the near shore. Preferably, what would you say, Scott, about 32 feet if anybody wanted to sponsor the Bite Me team?
Yeah. We mentioned that already. Yeah. We're just shameless now. We're just absolutely shameless now.
I'm probably going to go with a 25-foot.
Yeah.
I'm just not sure which brand yet. I've got three or four different ones I'm looking at.
All right.
We're going to see.
All right.
Well, if we're wishing, I want a 32.
Well, I mean, you're wishing. I'm looking at
he's being realistic here. All right. So a very simple question, very short question. How do I use wind direction to my advantage? You guys are always talking about this shoreline, the leeward shoreline versus the windblown shoreline versus this or that. Caleb, I'll start with you here because to me, I mean, it varies day to day, but how are you using wind direction? And I think he was talking about, all right, so a northwest wind is going to maybe, a light northwest wind is going to maybe help the surf, but it could dirty up the bay, but then there's going to be some good pockets in the bay as well. Wind direction to your advantage.
Yeah, this is just a time on the water thing, right there, mm-hmm. is knowing what that wind's going to be doing and where it's going to give you some clean places at. There's a lot of spots that a west wind can make it really good. And, you know, Pat and I won't even consider fishing certain places if there's a west wind or if there's not a west wind, mm-hmm. right? But, you know, you look in the morning, if you've got that light northwest wind, you can, there's a pretty good chance the surf's going to be laid down, assuming it was calm the day before.
Yeah.
As far as using it to your advantage to catch fish, it depends on how hard it's blowing, but if you're on a protected shoreline and you're not doing much good, sometimes it's worth going to that windy side and checking it out. I really don't feel like there is a set in stone set of rules for it,
mm-hmm.
but just knowing your bay system and you know, most of your coves are going to run from a southeast and northwest direction, right? So if you know if it's blowing southeast, it's going to be blowing water out of it. If it's blowing from the northwest, it's going to be sucking water out of it.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I don't see a whole lot that I figure you would, and I think it's the counteractions of each other. If that northwest wind blowing into those southeast pockets,
mm-hmm.
it usually doesn't dirty it up as bad as you think it would, but I think it's because that northwest wind is pulling water out, so you're getting the cleaner water out of the back lakes that are coming out and kind of keeping that pocket cleaner.
And there's a line.
Yeah,
there's almost a good which I you know I love to do those streaks and the lines of clear to dirty. What are your thoughts?
Well, I actually read the question.
Thank you, thank you.
I just went off what John asked. Yeah.
He was,
right?
He was talking about surf.
Yeah.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah.
No, said, but you mentioned that's why I said that.
Looking for a good day, you know, to try the surf. What are you usually looking at? Wind direction, wave heights, and this time intervals between the waves. You always hear us talking about it's 1.5 at 5 seconds, or it's 1.5 at 7 seconds, or it's 2 at 7 seconds. The first number is the height of the wave. That second number is how far apart those points of the wave are, you know, the peak of the wave.
Mm-hmm.
The further apart they are, 6, 7, 8 seconds, the calmer it's going to appear.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still a 2-foot wave. But it's a gentle rolling.
You can use it. You can navigate it a little better.
Yeah, a 3-foot at 8 seconds would probably be okay to run out on the beachfront.
Mm-hmm.
A 2-foot at
4 seconds,
6 seconds, or 4 seconds will beat you to death.
Yeah,
a 1.5 at 4 or 5 seconds will beat you to death, and that's not always about wind. There's times when, yeah, I get guys, hey, man, the wind's laid down. Let's go tarpon. You know, we can go hit the tarpon. Well, the wind's been blowing hard out of the southeast for 4 days. It's going to take two
I'm
or three days.
I'm smiling because this happened to me, and I convinced myself otherwise.
It takes two or three days for it to lay down.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's tempting when you wake up.
Trust me, I know.
You wake up, it's 5 miles an hour out of the southeast, and you're like, man, That's perfect. I'm going to run out to surf. That's
Were you what, with me on the boat?
Yeah.
If you don't have that north in the morning, it's hard to get it completely knocked down.
Yeah, but that little light north in the morning helps. But if it does that for two or three days where you've got, you know, that less than 10 miles an hour southeast wind, it's going to lay down, it's going to smooth out, and it's going to slick up. If it's got straight east, I had a guy here recently, man, it's only blowing 12, but it's straight east.
Yeah.
And that will just chop it to pieces.
Yeah.
Because we had had a southeast prior to that, so the southeast swells were coming, and now you got an east wind blowing the tops off sideways. Same thing with the southwest.
Mm-hmm.
Southwest, after, you know, you got, our waves generally come from the southeast, you know, for the most part, unless there's a big storm in the Gulf changing it. So anything that's blowing off of southeast is going to rough it up. That's why that little light north, northwest blows into it and it knocks it down. So what you're looking at is you want, for me to run the beachfront, I want it at least 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to correlate to about a 1.5 at 6 seconds or two at 6 seconds.
Right.
I'm cool. Get it at 3 and 6 seconds, it's probably going to be pretty damn rough. It's going to rock the boat a little bit. So you kind of got to play the odds there. You know, you work off of the two numbers together. There's no one number that's going to be perfect. Now, if it says 8 seconds and it's anything under 3, go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's rare, real, real rare.
That's whenever I had those kids out the other day, it was 1.5. It's, I think, 6 seconds, and it wasn't that bad. It was 5 seconds at some point, but it ended up rolling out throughout the day. One thing that I do notice a lot is I use the Magic Seaweed, and it's pretty bulletproof. But if it, Sunday it said 1.5 at 6 seconds, I think it got down to 1.3, 1.7, something like that. Well, you know, I'd been real busy and I was kind of beat up and tired from doing stuff around the house. And Robert and Taylor, they wanted to go out. There was a weed line out there, and they wanted to go out there and try to catch some chicky dolphin and go mess with ling and all that. And we were looking at it and I said, man, I really don't, 1.5 at 6, I really don't feel like doing it. And it ended up being absolute glass out there that day. It just, so the forecast is just that. It's just a forecast. If it's showing anything decent, There's a good chance to go, and I would imagine it has a lot to do with the current and how it's going
high
against
pressure.
It.
Yeah.
Was it the high pressure?
High pressure settles in over us during the summertime. You get that super high where it just feels oppressive.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to flatten that surf up.
Yeah.
It'll lay it down really good, even when it's not supposed to.
It was mirrored out there, you know, and heck, there was a day a couple of weeks back when I took these two guys out and they ended up doubling up on ling, and I think it was the first time they ever did it, and now they're absolute crackheads to go out there.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And I'd fish the surf for 3 or 4 days. Well, then it started blowing out of the southwest, and it was blowing every bit of 15.
Mm-hmm.
And my customer that day, we went to the back lakes, caught some redfish, and I get back, and that customer that I took to catch the ling, he says, yeah, we went 23 miles out today.
Oh.
I said, and he has a 25-foot JH like mine.
Yeah.
I said, you took that out there? Oh, yeah. It's a little bit bumpy going out. And the way back in, it was great.
Yeah, you didn't have to use the motor.
You don't know until you go, I guess, is my point. The Magic Seaweed is pretty solid, but sometimes it's way choppier and sometimes it's way smoother.
I made the one that I was laughing about, Scott, is I made that tactical error, and I always preach it, and I always tell everybody, look at the weather, look at the wind 2-3 days before you go. I mean, I'm looking at it all week, but you know what I mean. And I didn't. And then I the night before, I'm looking at it, and I'm like, ooh, baby, southeast, 5 to 10. it's going to be on, you know, high pressure, all the things you're talking about. I made that cut through Mitchell's, and I'm like, what the heck is going on here? I was like, it was brown, it was bouncy, because it had already been blowing otherwise, and it hadn't settled in yet.
Yeah. What was it, Steve Reed got you into?
Glass, man. It's going to be glass. It was like threes and fours at 4 seconds. I think Cade was 4 years old at the time, and we ran like 25 miles out. Kate was not happy about it. So I told
him, I guess not.
I told Kate, I said, every time we fall off the back of a wave pretty hard, you just punch him right in the butt. And he did. about 5 miles when I could tell Kate was getting mad about it. And from 5 miles to 25 miles, Steve got one right in the butt every time we came off. But I mean, sometimes though, John, you know, the roughest spot is always out in front of Caney or out in front of the jetties or whatever. Sometimes you get past that.
And yeah.
Like we took my boat about, I don't know, 25 miles out a while back, and it was bumpy as heck about the first 10 miles, but then as the water started getting deeper, it rolled out a little bit better.
Yeah, no, that is absolutely true. Long story short, northwest wind after a couple of calm days, 5 to 10, it's going to be on.
That's ice cream. It doesn't happen all that often.
Yeah, when it does.
That's the day you take off of work.
Yeah, when it does, be there. All right, one more here before we get out of here, because it hasn't really been discussed a lot. I mean, we've talked about it here and there. But this was a lady that listens to the podcast, and she says, I just couldn't catch, I think she was saying, it wasn't flounder. It might have been sheephead. I kept pulling the hook out of the mouth. Is it my hook? Is it me? Is it the lure? And so I went back and forth with her a little bit. I said, you know, there are different hook sets for different types of fish. And really it's just trial and error when you know what's there. You know, she was blind casting, I'm guessing, and then finally realized what it was. It's not talked about a lot, but you have to have different hook sets for using artificials, I'm guessing right now, for the fish you're catching.
Low into the side generally will work, I mean, on most everything. Mm-hmm. The Bill Dance overhead big hook set, it's low percentage. Mm-hmm. It'll jerk a soft plastic right out of a fish's mouth.
Yeah,
and I've always done best with, you know, trying to concentrate on keeping it low into the side. If I can see the fish or I know that the fish hit left or right, I'll go in the opposite direction low. Mm-hmm. It's hard to do. It's hard to make yourself do that.
But you'll see it when you start getting the bites.
Yeah, but most people have one way to hook. You know,
Hammer it.
Yeah, hook set is always to the right. You know, it's just the way it is.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you can make yourself hook set to the left when a fish is moving left or right, you'll hook up a lot more often.
And Caleb, I said it wasn't flounder, because flounder, everybody knows, is just a different bite.
You can't catch them. they're not possible to catch.
He's the flounder expert.
I hate flounder. I can't stand them. I don't have the patience to catch a flounder. They get that tick tick and then you wait on them, you know. Me and Nick went out into one of his honey holes and it go tick tick, and my hook set,
and the lure's already in the boat.
Yeah, everybody that fishes with me knows you do not stand to the right of me, because it's a low right sweeping hook set, but it happens fast and violently.
Yeah.
And so the first one tick tick, what the heck, you know? And Nick said, oh, you got to wait on them. I said, okay. And the next one, I flipped out there and tick tick, and I waited about 3 seconds and air ball. And the next one, I throw out there and tick tick, and I'm just holding my rod like Opie on the porch, you know, on the dock. And it pulls my rod tip all the way to the water, swimming off. And when my rod tip gets to water, I set the hook and I almost hit myself between the eyes with the jig head.
Really?
I thought
for sure you'd get him on that one.
Now, you know, a lot of people would have thought that. They're just something. Flounder, me and Flounder are not friends.
I remember a few years ago, he had a tournament that was coming up. It was one of some charity tournament or something, and Flounder was one of the categories.
It's the Texas Trio. Pat, Nick, and I have lost a combined $100,000 in 2 years over a stinking flounder. We had a big trout and a big red both times by 10 o'clock in the morning. And
flounder time, baby.
Yeah. And Nick, I mean, Nick's a good flounder fisherman, but I have no use for those things.
It's a different animal.
Me and Dean were fishing one that we had to have a red, a trout, and a flounder on a kayak trip. Mm-hmm. And we had our red and our trout, you know, pretty quick, and we got them good. We hunted and hunted and hunted and hunted and hunted for a flounder. We could not find one. I'd paddled off a little ways, and I looked back, and Dean's standing up on top of a duck blind. Yeah, you know, he had to relieve himself, so he jumped up in a duck blind. And he takes care of business. He stands up, and he hollers at me. He says, "Hey, man, where are we going next?" And he looks down, and he goes, "Oh, crap." I said, "What?" And he goes, "It was a flounder laying right here next to the duck blind." He just took off.
I wonder what made it run away. I wonder what that could have been. Who knows? All right, boys, Captain Caleb TV, blowing and going. You're back at it. What can we expect on your YouTube channel, my man?
We got all kinds of new stuff coming up. I'm gonna be doing a lot more short stuff, you know, like 2 minute how to knots and stuff like that. I'm gonna stick with my instructional stuff. Then I've got some humor relief coming as well.
I'm sure you do.
I've done some stuff with a couple of the bigger names in the business that I'm excited to get out there, and so we're just gonna keep developing it and see where it goes.
And Scott Null Photographer for gear. And I said this last week, get some of those photos. They're outstanding. We may even see some more fishing type photos on there for our particular listeners, correct?
I'll work on it.
All right.
He's committed now.
He's committed now. I just committed you for that. I'm sure a lot of people have been trying to commit you for years. But
I've got a picture in my head of this lighthouse at Port O'Connor.
There you go.
That I got to get a nighttime shot with the stars and all that. It's been in my head for a couple of years.
Open the aperture real wide.
Got to get out there and get it done.
In fact, I think that somebody should go make a post on the Bite Me page, and we'll talk about how much we'd like to be able to purchase nautical themed photographs from Scott Noel Photography.
Oh. Done.
Who's gonna? I think John Parkoff. I think he's gonna be the guy that does it.
He's the man.
I think John's gonna
do
it.
He's absolutely the man.
Sick the bulldog on me. Come on.
All right. I appreciate you guys. We all do listening, booking trips with Scott and Caleb, and listening to the podcast. Hopefully, you guys are catching more fish. It seems like you are, and we always appreciate your questions. So get out there and catch them up. The conditions should be pretty good, and from there, we'll go on. What else you got?
Hey, while we're committing Scott with stuff, I think he owes us a tattoo, too, doesn't he?
Oh, whatever happened with that?
I think...
Well, I broke a wing.
Oh, that's right.
But we're going to do it, right?
Yeah, it's going to happen. It might not happen right now.
Tattoo your fingertips. You won't feel it.
Yeah, exactly. Zero feeling in my fingertips right now.
All right, boys. Appreciate you listening.
This injury is lingering.
We'll get with you next week. More topics. Bring them our way. And until then, catch them up. Tight lines.